some question. And we have Hashapriya Prabhu here this evening. He'll speak tomorrow. There's some question?
In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's the story of the Avadhut. Mm-hmm. And what message are we supposed to get from that? And what kind of realization does he have? And is it Brahman realization or Paramatma realization or what?
Well, just to... In summary, I don't know much about it. But in summary, it reminds me of Guru Maharaj saying, you know, for one whose eyes are awakened, they will find traces of divinity anywhere and everywhere. So what's being shown there runs parallel to things that are shown also in the Bhagavad Gita. Rasoham apsukonteya prabhasmi shashi shureyo pranava sarvaveda ishu shabdake purusham nashu. How to see Krishna in everything and within everything. In and within everything. And without everything. So that's why Guru Maharaj, he summarizes it in the saying, for one who's eye is awakened, he will find traces of divinity everywhere and in everything, in every situation. That is the point. How can we think there's anything other than Krishna? Right? At the basis. So the Bhagavatam, the book of Krishna, the Krishna book, begins early on saying, Vedanti tat tatvidas yad jnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shavyate advaya gyan yasmin vigyate sarvam eva vigyatam bhavati. There's only one thing to know. I've told Einstein had a mistress after he moved to New Jersey and was teaching at Princeton. And she suggested to him, she was a simple-hearted lady, and she said, you should keep a notebook for all of your ideas. And he said, I don't need a notebook, I only have one idea. He said, and this one idea, it's like the theory of everything. I'm trying to find out this one thing by knowing which everything becomes known. I'm preoccupied with, I don't have many different ideas. Even if it appears that way, it's just one thing. I'm trying to know this one thing, by knowing which, everything is known. That's Shraddha Shabde Bishvasako He Sudrida Nishchoy Krishna Bhakti Koyle Sarva Karma Krita Hoy. We shouldn't think what the Avadhut is doing in the Bhagavad, that's different than what we're doing. On one level, say, how can you say that? It's so very, very... On another level, not. It's a principle. Just as when Guru Maharaj, some years ago, and some discussion was there about like ISKCON and him, and what he represents. Chaitanya Saraswatmat, Gaudiamat, etc. And at one point, Guru Maharaj quoted Raghunath Das Goswami and his famous sloka, Nama Shrestam Manumapi Satriputra Matra Swarupam Rupam Tasya Graja Madhupurim Maturim Gostavatim Radha Kundam Girivaramaho Radhika Madhavasam Prapto Jasya Pratita Kripaya Sri Gurun Tanmatosmi. Here, Das Goswami is cataloging what I've got at the lotus feet of Guru. Srila Govinda Maharaj, Srila Gurudev pointed out, generally Vaishnavas, they're not speaking like that. They're saying they've not got. Na prema gandasti drapi mehuro. They're saying, They're empty, they're hungry, they're hankering, they've not got. Right? That points to necessity, actually, according to Guru Maharaj. That it's not something that should be depressing, discouraging, but rather it points to a particular necessity. That's why candid assessment of one's spiritual position or lack of, that's what's necessary to make progress. Sambandha gyan, we need to identify where we are. Just like on the GPS, you have to put in a starting point and a goal. Right? These two things have to be there. Then it can show. You'll go this way and that way. It will show you a path. But you need to know those things. Otherwise, if you say, oh, the goal is this, but you don't clearly understand what is your present position, you're in denial about what is your present position. You're not willing to deal with your present position. Then how can you chalk out a path toward the goal? So, so Guru Maharaj, in a very, after quoting Raghunath Das Goswami in this famous sloka, right, Nama Shrestham, and as Guru said, Vaishnava said, I don't have. He said, but here, because he's talking about Sri Guru, he's saying, Prapto Jasya Pratita Kripaya Sri Guru Ntanva. This is what your gift is, what I got from you. It can't be denied. Right? Nama Shrestham, the best of the name, the holy name of Krishna. Matura, it goes on mentioning so many things. Radhika Madhavasam, an aspiration for the service of the lotus feet. Radha Madhava, Radha Dasyam, otherwise indicated. Same thing in the Chaitanya Saraswat Mat Pranam. Sri Guru Gauranga Kritimati Guru Gauranga Radha Jitasha Rupa Nuga Sri Kritimati Guru Gauranga Radha Jitasha. Guru Maharaj said to the devotees, is Raghunath Das Goswami a member of ISKCON? Because they're saying, is this person? And he said, so Raghunath Das Goswami, who's the Prayojan Tattva Acharya, and he says these things in his sloka, is he a member of ISKCON? So we can also say, is Prabhupada a member of the Chaitanya Saraswat Mat? He will be excluded? So he's saying, Das Goswami. So if we read of the Avadhut and the Bhagavatam, we're thinking like, oh, this stuff is really far out, you know, it's very different. That won't be Guru Maharaj's interpretation. That's he'll mention that on a general level because Avadhut is being named, an unconventional approach and all that. But Guru Maharaj's interpretation is thematic. He has an ontological method. He will say, the Bhagavatam is about rasa. This has to be grasped. Whether we're reading the fifth canto, the first canto, the Avadhut, the Avanti Brahman, you know, Banasura, Bomasura, Guru Maharaj will say, the Bhagavatam is about rasa. What is this book's subject? In the beginning of the Golden Volcano of Divine Love, and the introduction there, and says, he says, Srimad Bhagavatam takes us from the domain of, ontology. From, you know, ontology, philosophy, to the domain of rasa. That we cannot lose sight of that. After that is what this book is about. Shyamalila Avalambam. Is that Shyamalila? Interesting choice of words. Gurudev once in front of the deities in Navadip, Gandharva Govinda Sundar, Guru Gauranga. And he looked at the deity, he turned and he said, heavy Madhura Rasa. And I said, I mean, I don't know what to say. That's like, oh. But he said, also he said, black is the color of Madhura Rasa. And that I thought, that's very mysterious. Black, what does he mean? And then I thought of Guru Maharaj's sloka, Shyamalila. Shyamalila Avalambam. What does Guru Maharaj say in this sloka? Yadamiyam mahima sri bhagavatyam katayam prati patam anubhutam yapya labdabideya tad akila rasamurti Shyamalila Avalambam Madhura rasadi sri radha parapadmam prapadye. So he's saying, although ostensibly her name is not mentioned in the book, other than the Aradita reference, in every sloka, every step of the way, pratipadam, is meant to take us in the direction of the service of her holy lotus feet. So we can say, well, that's a very deep level of interpretation. To understand the infinite will require very deep levels of interpretation. So then I will say, as I told you, I'm not intimately acquainted with that section. I've read through it. Guru Maharaj has said a few things about it. But I will remember what the target is, where this is taking us. Those same... the Braja Gopis what is their method of interpretation, of seeing? Find in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, when they're searching for Sri Krishna after he has withdrawn himself. We know that he went to search for Sri Radha, Srimati Radharani, but that leaves them in the madness of Viraha Bhav, searching for Krishna. They're inquiring from the Malika, the jasmine flowers, the different types of flowers there. They're inquiring from the trees. Right? They think that, as it's called, the trees are male, if we have to make this type of determination. They're male. The creepers are female. So when they inquire from the trees and say, they're silent. If someone looks at this objective, they say, of course the trees aren't saying anything. But that's not what they think. They think, conspiracy. Their parent, they're thinking, oh, I see. You're all males. It's a conspiracy to protect him. You're not saying anything. That's what they say to the trees. When they look at the deer and they see, what is it? Doe, a deer, a female deer. What's the male? Stag? Buck. Look, so the does and the gopi, what are they thinking? This shows how their divine madness of separation from Krishna is infusing their vision wonderfully. Everything is an external mirror representation of their hearts. So when they look at the deer, what do they say? Oh, we're not so fortunate. You, husband and wife, male and female, you're both devotees of Krishna. You can happily serve Krishna together. We envy your position. Our position is unfortunate because our husbands will not allow us to go to Krishna. So we're appreciating your position. So many things they're saying. Right? So it's all about interpretation. I'd like to mention that Nietzsche in one place says, you know, because he's so much influenced modern thought, but a lot of things he says are, I think, a double-edged sword, and we can pray, bowing our heads to Sarasvati, take what he says in another direction. One of the things he says is, There are no facts, there are only interpretations. That means, in our context, what is seen objectively, that's what you're told, there's what, 24 gurus, or 26, 24, of the avadhut. We're not thinking of them as guru normally, but his awakening is such that he's seeing guru. And what is guru? One who gives us shelter and the service in the lotus feet of Krishna, really. We can say, tad vijnanartam, vijnanartam sa gurum eva bigachet samak pani srotriyam brahmanishtam. We can talk about understanding Brahman, but Brahman for devotee shall never be divorced from Krishna. There are other words that mean formless, like nirakar. But Brahman, more specifically, has been described, the Brahma Jyoti is the effulgence of Krishna. And we hear from Guru Maharaj, composed of innumerable jivas. So really, we won't think of it impersonal in the sense of not resting upon the personality of Godhead. There's a difference between how devotees conceive of Brahman and Paramatma than non-devotees. In the Gita, Brahmanohi pratishtaham amritasavya yasyacha. Because it's resting on him personally. Ultimately, nothing is impersonal. Everything is of the nature of consciousness. Consciousness cannot be divorced from personality. So sometimes when Guru Maharaj would speak along these lines under the heading of the subjective evolution of consciousness, he said, Yajavar Maharaj would become flustered and say, so is this chair a person? And Guru Maharaj would say, yes. And he goes, oh! Because what Guru Maharaj is saying, it's very profound. He's saying, these Vedic rishis, why do they address the apparently inanimate as personal? Because ultimately, the whole objective world is nothing more than a cluster of subjective concepts floating in an ocean of consciousness. That this chair is hard, it has length, breadth, width, height, depth, weight. It's varnished, it's brown, it's reddish, it's so many things. Those are all concepts. So a cluster of subjective concepts, that's something hard, soft, light, heavy, etc., make an object. It means it's floating in consciousness. The whole objective world is like that. So Guru Maharaj, when the rishis, but they're very advanced, they're seeing everything like X-ray vision. When you go to the airport, right? They need to X-ray you, because what can be seen by the visible eye is one thing. They need to see what's beneath the surface, right? So they're scanning us. Same thing. These rishis, they're scanning Shastra Chakshu, their eyes. They see in another way, right? So what did I just say before that? Oh, about the rishis. So when they address the ocean or the river, is the river Jamuna, is it impersonal? We don't think of rivers and oceans as persons, but Jamuna is a river, liquid, Jala Brahma. What is it? Brahma Prema Gatri, Chidananda Bano, when Mahaprabhu saw the Jamuna, Ganga Jamuna, on his way to Vrindavan, and he became ecstatic. So it's a way of seeing. That's what it is. So when he's seeing all of these different aspects of the apparent mundane world, his depths, his inner awakenment is such that it's favorable, it's guru, it's indicating to him a spiritual direction to pursue. There's always a internal aspect, external aspect, absolute consideration, relative consideration. So, for example, we also hear that in the there's a Vedic science of lakshan, symptoms, sulakshan, it's favorable symptom indications, and then those which are inauspicious, right? It's mentioned by Prabhupada in one place in the Bhagavatam. You're about to go on a trip, someone's carrying empty buckets, inauspicious. Full buckets of water, auspicious, good sign. And so those who know the sign, they're looking, seeing these different indications, whether it'll be favorable or not. But Guru Maharaj points out, that's, you know, it's a mundane type thing, right? As many Vedic prescriptions, they're how to deal in the mundane world, how to navigate the mundane world, how to interpret the mundane world. But Srila Guru Maharaj said, but actually, this science exists on a higher level in Goloka Vrindavan and the Aprakrita Leela of Krishna. And Srimati Radharani herself, she's looking for indications in the environment, and to her that means whether or not it'll be favorable for meeting with Krishna or not. That's where this is coming from originally. Janmad yasya yataha. Everything has its position in the original. It can be traced to the central conception of the absolute personality of Godhead, which means the aprakrita human-like pastimes of Krishna. What was the question beyond the avadhut?
What was his realization?
Oh. Well, you can understand from what I'm saying.
And what are we supposed to get out of
it? What I told. Always remember, the Bhagavatam is taking us to one place, ultimately. Radha Dasyam, the service of the lotus feet of Radharani, from the domain of ontology to the domain of rasa. If ever we think anything there is pointing us in another direction, we're misreading. This is the unified field theory. This is the ultimate theory of everything. It must all be interpreted this way. So, and to interpret it otherwise is either, as I say, to misread or to interpret it on a superficial level. Anything else?
How can we fully...
Look, we read of Prahlad Maharaj, and we'll say, oh, this is teaching us Shuddha Bhakti. Right? That's a role. You know, Shiva. We'll say, oh, Gyana Misra Bhakti. But do we really think, ultimately, Shiva's a Gyana Misra Bhakta? No, there's Bhog Shiv, Tyag Shiv, Bhakta Shiv. But in a particular context, he's doing something. So this avadhut, he's playing a particular role. But what is his personal internal? I cannot say. I'd have to study that section. Oh, but on Prahlad. So Prahlad Maharaj, we're taking Shuddha Bhakti. It comes after Vritrasura, sixth canto. So we're moving towards pure devotion. Same thing in Brihad Bhagavatamritam. Shiva sends Narada to Prahlad. Right? But within the seventh canto, Prahlad's talking in that famous sloka, the chana kalo. How you appear, you're covered in the Kali Yuga. So we say, oh, this is indicative of the appearance of Mahaprabhu. So this Prahlad Maharaj, who's speaking this in the Bhagavatam, referring to the covered avatar of, you know, Channa avatar, Mahaprabhu, in the Kali Yuga, does he know something about Mahaprabhu? Or only you do? Right. We know something about Mahaprabhu, but Prahlad doesn't. You know, that's not possible. It's only possible, like yoga maya and lilic play. So in this, and then, as I say, in this pastime, here in this sloka, it's appearing there. So in this context, just like given a role, a particular role to play, he is playing that role, and he's lost in that role, absorbed in that role. But we'll be careful about thinking, are these the limitations of his realization? That's my point. So why should someone in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam be Brahman realized? What do we need another book like that for? After the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we're in the 11th canto, it's going to close in the 12th. It has to be factoring in all of this. That's my contention. But what's the next?
How can we understand and fully realize in a practical way subjective evolution? How really are we objects of the subject or super subject?
Well, I'll say one thing about that. Is first, let's understand simply, because someone asked me this recently too, and there should be simple ways. Sometimes we make it's very deep and profound, the ramifications of understanding this. But sometimes Guru Maharaj expresses it very simply. Right? I'm saying, the world is in the mind. Right? Berkeley saying, the world is in the mind. There it is. Very simple. And he's saying, not the mind is in the world. The world is in the mind. Just like I said, this chair, hard, soft, heavy, light, etc., all concepts. It's being sustained by consciousness. So consciousness is the primordial element. So we have to understand, when we speak of subjective evolution of consciousness, when we talk about subjective evolution here we're taking it that the objective world is material, it's mundane. And the subject is Atma, soul. But whenever we say Atma, remember there's two divisions, Atma and Paramatma. Consciousness, super consciousness. Soul, super soul. Jivatma, Paramatma. So here the Atma is the subject and the objective world is the object. And it can conceive, that world can float in the consciousness. When we go out of the material world into the Vaikuntha world, then in that super subjective world, the jiva is object and Krishna is the subject. Jiva swarupai Krishna nityada. We're the eternal servants of Krishna. We're meant to please Krishna. Right? Here, we think when we're taking ourselves to be subjects, that there are the objects of the senses, seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling, feeling. Right? We want to, that these things shall provide enjoyment to us. Right? So Guru Maharaj is cautioning us, when we begin to conceive of the spiritual world, not to think of it as something objective, taking ourselves to be the subject, and the holy name shall be the object of your pleasure. Right. You'll chant the holy name. It should make you feel some happiness. You'll execute, you know, sadhana bhakti. It should make you feel happy. Right? That's not his idea. That's taking all of the activities of Krishna consciousness are objective activities, and you're the subject, and they're meant for your pleasure or consumption. Whereas to leaving this scenario of objective, mundane soul as the subject and entering the spiritual domain, the supersubjective world, then we understand there we're the objects meant for the pleasure and satisfaction of Krishna. So then if someone says, well, how to realize this practically? Well, I would say, in simple acts of devotion, which according to Sridhar Swami means ado, arpita, paschad, kriyata. Beginning, middle, and end is for Krishna. That's devotion proper. Karma means for bhakti, devotion mixed with an element of, you know, fruitive intent, remuneration, not so. Same thing with gyan. Gyanam is for bhakti. So Rupa Goswami, who defines what is pure devotion, says, anya abhilashita shunyam, gyana karmadhyanavritam, anukuryena krishnanushilanam, bhakti rutama. No coating, no layer of karma or gyan, and krishnanushilana. What is favorable or pleasing to Krishna? There's a famous verse in the Bhagavatam. Forget the Sanskrit right now, but and you can read it. And it sounds very like stilted or complicated. But Gurudev would say, "What is this verse telling us? Give Krishna what he wants." He's saying it's telling us that devotion is giving Krishna what he wants. He made it that simple. Whereas otherwise, if you just read it, you could get lost trying to find out what it means. So, and sometimes you do. If Krishna wants a samosa, give him a samosa. Right? It's giving Krishna what he wants. How do we know what Krishna wants? I mentioned when in the early days, people are hearing, you know, give Krishna the best thing you've got, give that to Krishna. So one disciple of Prabhupada, wasn't it Kanchan Bala? She had this favorite rock. So she gave that to Prabhupada. You know, you should give the best thing you have. She said, this is the best thing I have. I'm giving this to Prabhupada. So we can say, that's sweet and that's nice. But if we look in the scriptures, we'll get a better idea. These kind of flowers are acceptable in Vishnu Aradhana. And, you know, sweet, like jasmine, the Lilavati flower, Goloka Champa, these type of fragrant, you know, these are for the puja of Vishnu or Krishna. Right? Mahadeva, you got bale fruit, the like Tulsi leaves go to Vishnu, he gets bale leaves. Ma Kali gets the red flowers. Anyway, different things. So we'll get a better idea looking through the scriptures. Oh, although this is nice, oh, this is not worship offerable to Vishnu or Krishna. So it says, these are, I'll offer those things. But then if we want to know, even have a more refined idea, we'll come from the Vaishnava, the Shuddha Bhakta, like Bhakti Vinod Thakur. Shukta Shakadi Bhaji Nalita Kujmando. Janardhan Maharaj will be very happy to hear this, that Shukta is first. But it's right there, Bhaktivinoda. Shukta Shak Adi, etc. Nalita Kujmanda means the pumpkin, squaw, you know, it starts naming the, and saying, so we can understand, if Bhaktivinoda Thakur, right, these are the things we should target. When we read in the Chaitanya Charitamritam, at what does Sachi Mata feed? The Nimai Pandits just become Sri Krishna Chaitanya. What does she feed him there? There's a list. Most of those things are unconceivable to us. Nonetheless, there's a list there. Begun Bhaja is one of them, by the way. But so we look at the list, then we think. So then we can understand this coming out of the heart of the Vaishnava, this will be most pleasing to Krishna. Not chatasman manusheshu kaschan me priyakritama. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying, no one is more dear to me. But if we start of those who are in that group of no one is more dear to me, who is the most dear to Krishna ultimately? Means Srimati Radharani. According to Guru Maharaj, we will take Radharani's suggestion. How she is suggesting to serve Krishna, we want to target that. We say, well, how will we know? We don't know Radharani and what she wants. Through the Guru Parampara, coming, Radharani's delegation, what comes down to us? Then what do we hear from her most recent, super empowered delegate, Srila Saraswati Thakur? Pujala Ragapat Gaurava Bhange Matala Sarujana Bishayarange. The path of Ragamarg we shall keep high above and one step below, serve that plane. That was his, that's the foundation of the Gaudiya Math, to serve that plane by dealing with so many things in this world, actually. That's what Vishayarange means. Vishaya, it sounds like mundane things. We may have to come in connection with them in service to this higher plane. Elsewhere, Guru Maharaj called it bait. And sometimes like the fisherman uses some bait to catch the fish. So sometimes there's some bait. Avadhut Maharaj knows this very well, how to get a full house. Like when we were in Kiev, there's some bait being used to bring the people to the festival ground. But once they come there, we can say directly Krishna consciousness. It's never influenced in 15 years anything that I've said. And while we're on the subject, and for 15 years, every advertisement for every talk I've ever given, Amiya knows, Shama Madhava, it says, Bhakti Siddhar Goswami will speak on the subjective evolution of consciousness. 15 years. I have one poster. You could print the same one. It doesn't matter. That's what I talk about. Yeah. Except one time in Moscow, so I'm there together, and I say, are there any questions? And some guest, he says, could you say something about the ancient Slavic culture of Russia and the Vedas? And I said, I'm not here to talk about that. I'm here to talk about Mahaprabhu. And then he held up a flyer that had been printed. And he said, it says on here that you were going to give a talk tonight about the, I said, oh. I said, well, you know everything there is to know about the ancient Slavic culture and all that, so let me say something about the Vedic culture. But subjective evolution, Prabhupada had life comes from life. It's interesting, and I think in retrospect, he and Guru Maharaj must have had this dialogue going on for a long time. Because Prabhupada, Swami Maharaj, his life comes from life is very much like the subjective evolution of consciousness. And that would just get him going. Devotees want to talk about all kinds of things. Prabhupada would be on a walk with his stop. Srip Damodar Maharaj would be way in the back. He's a very humble Vaishnava. Prabhupada would stop and just go, scientist! And then Srup Damodar Maharaj would come to the front and they'd have this mock debate about, science and Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada wanted so much that the Bhaktivedanta Institute would deal with these issues. But Guru Maharaj gave as a gift, it's an open secret if you can comprehend it, the subjective evolution of consciousness. And he says, in his own words, that consciousness is the basis of everything, he said, is an atom bomb to the atheists and their misconception. So it has as its basis consciousness. And you'll see thematically, Guru Maharaj employ this type of interpretation and ontological method elsewhere. Even in his Gayatri explanation, it moves that way. When he's talking about Savitur, being the sun reveals everything and illumines everything. But Guru Maharaj will say, no, but without the soul, the seer, what is to be seen? So really, we shall take Savitur, which you would take superficially to mean the sun, to be Atma, the soul. But what's enabling the soul? Paramatma. So then there's the Paramatma world. But that's not the, Bhagavan world. So then Guru Maharaj, now suddenly it's Bargo by Brishabhanu Jatma Bivavai Karadana Sripuram. The whole spiritual world is being illuminated by Srimati Radharani. Now, if we hear that, we'll be thinking, like, we have these lights here. We think of that as illumination, and it is, but it's a crude example of illumination. In the objective world, we have the sun and these extensions of the lights and electricity and such things. But the spiritual world is comprised of consciousness. Right? Shraddha mayoyam loka, seva mayoyam loka. How do you illuminate consciousness with service, the concept of service and servitor identity? She's revealing that. So he says, Bargo means like Bargo by, and Brishabhanu, Nandini, Bargo by Brishabhanu, what is it? Bargo by Brishabhanu, Jatma Bivabai, Ekaradana Sripuram. The spiritual world is like a city. Like I told the mundane example, Paris means the city of light. Here Guru Maharaj is saying, Sri Puram, the spiritual world, it's a world of light, but it's a world of service, and that service is revealed by Srimati Radharani. So she's illuminating the whole seva world, the whole spiritual world. She's revealing what is service to Krishna by accepting her suggestion. Elsewhere, Guru Maharaj says, the faith is the halo of Radharani. These are profound statements. It's one sentence. Faith is the halo of Radharani. Think about that for a lifetime or more. Then that means whatever we're thinking, it's so small, so tiny. Even as we think that we have an idea of what the infinite is. That's laughable. Right? Brahma, when he goes to Dwaraka, and that time where he's waiting to see Krishna, and the secretary comes out and says, "Yes, I'm here to see Krishna." Oh. Goes into, Brahma's here to see you. And Krishna says, tell him to wait a few minutes. Anyway, which one? And he comes back out and says, the Brahma, four-headed Brahma. He'll be available shortly. But by the way, which Brahma are you? And he's like, what do you mean? Four Chaturmukh Brahma, father of the four Kumaras. Oh, okay. And then Krishna summons all the Brahmas. Eight-headed, 16-headed, 32 gigaheads, all these Brahmas from all their different universes come. And they like bow before Krishna. And we're told our Brahma, Chaturmukh Brahma, four-headed Brahma of this universe, he felt like an insect in the midst of so many giant elephants. Janantu eva janantu. Brahma will think like that. If we find ourselves not thinking like that, then we need some correction. Ekang stena stito jagat. When Krishna shows Virata Rupa to Arjuna and reveals, and Arjuna's mind is blown. And in the end, Krishna says, Ekang stena, Arjuna, with a negligent part of myself, I do this kind of thing. Let me know when you've had enough. I remember when I was a teenager and had started reading Bhagavad Gita, I used to, every time I'd finish the book, I'd go back to the beginning and starting it, and I'd think, oh, what, which chapter did you like the best? And in the beginning, I liked the 11th chapter a lot because it was like hallucinogenic, his millions of forms, and I, that's the way I was thinking of it because of the time. I mean, partially because of the time. So, and I thought, oh, this is God. I was impressed, like, this is God. Look, Krishna's showing to Arjuna. But the part that would bewilder me was not that. The part that would bewilder me would be towards the end of the chapter where Arjuna, he's not entirely happy seeing all of this. It's frightening him. It's making him, he's filled with anxiety. So, and he's losing his sanity, as we can imagine. So, Krishna, then it says, Taneva rupena chaturbhujena. Then Krishna shows forearm form. And Arjuna starts to calm down a little bit. Then it says, what does he show? His somya rupam, his beautiful form, reality of the beautiful, his two-arm form. And this is the part that confused me as a teenager. He would say, and he says to Arjuna, now he's back in his two-arm form, he's saying, this is the ultimate form of God, of me, that all the great sages and saints and realized souls are ever eager to have a glimpse of. And I thought, I couldn't understand it at the time. Of course, if you read Prabhupada's purport, then you'll get the idea. But you understand what I'm saying here, that it appears one thing by its sheer magnitude of expression, we'll have a tendency to think of that as being divine. Right? But Krishna's saying, Ekang stena stito jagat. What you conceive of as the infinite is the tiniest finite to me. So Guru Maharaj will say, what do we have? Our faith. That's all we have. And that we got under the guidance of Sarvashastra Guru Vaishnav. Right? The accumulation of Sukriti expresses itself as faith. Agyata Sukriti, Gyata Sukriti, Shraddha. And for it to develop, have to be Sadhu Sangha, under the guidance of genuine devotees. Then it starts to grow and develop. So Guru Maharaj would say, take that faith you have, acknowledging that it's small. As I've told, when Salvador Dali was asked, they said, and we know what an eccentric he was. He's an eccentric genius, surrealistic painter. And they said, Dali, do you believe in God? And he said, yes, but I have no faith. And I thought about it. I thought, oh, it's, he was always honest in a odd way. So he's saying, here it is, just naked, unfiltered, unscripted truth. Yeah, I believe in God. Everyone does, actually. Even atheists, everybody believes in God. And he said, but I don't have any faith. Because faith can only develop in the association with those who have faith. Most people are atheists, What they're railing against are some conceptions that are, even in our own estimation, less than worthy of divinity. That's mainly what they're upset about, is a poor representation of the infinite, some finite brain's projection of what God is. And they can see, this is silly, it's foolish, it's not enchanting, it's not charming, like the sweetness, irresistible sweetness of Krishna conception. So, what was the question? Oh, the subjective evolution of consciousness. Just listen to all the things Guru Maharaj says and they'll make some impression on the heart. Saying it's like hypnotism. As the super subject compels us to see, we'll see that. Disappearance of Mahaprabhu. Nothing is expressed anywhere about that, really. But different legends have passed down. He went for darshan to Jagannath and normally stands at Garuda Stambha. This particular day, he couldn't control himself. And he stands at Garuda Stambha to try and maintain his composure. It's far away, actually. But this day he couldn't resist and he runs towards the deity and people see him enter Jagannath. Others see that he goes to visit Gadadhar Pandit and Tota Gopinath and enters the Tota Gopinath deity. Right? And the pujaris, if you go there at the special time, they will lift the cloth and show you the golden mark. Yeah. And that's early. You have to go early. They know what they're doing. We were there with Avadhut Maharaj and everybody a little while back. Then others saw him walk into the sea, just walk across the sea out of sight. Some saw him like the ascension, go into the sky. And then there's some other things they say. And what does Guru Maharaj say? Just like a hypnotist. As he compels you to see, to some he's showing this way, to others another way, to others yet another way. When Krishna enters Kamsa's arena, right, for the wrestling match, what does it say? Malanam ashinirninam nadavara strinam smaro murtiman gopanam svajanam shatam shitipujam shastra shapitro shishu Mrityu boja pite virada vidusam tatvam param yoginam Vrishne nam paradevate ti vidito rangam gata sagraja. Mala, the wrestlers, ashani, like he appear like lightning. Like sometimes we look at lightning and it scares the hell out of you, right? Like, and it's just your heart like drops, you know, like thunder and lightning. Narabara, some they're looking, have we ever seen a more extraordinary, this is the perfection of what a man can be. Strinam smara murtiman, and the lady saw him. Smara sometimes means Cupid. Strinam smara murti. Is this not Cupid personified? Or if we factor in Brahma Sangita, Kandarpa Koti Kamaniya Vishesha Shobham, 10 million Cupids personified as one. They're seeing him like that. Mrityu Bojapate, Kongs is seeing death personified. Vasudeva and Devaki, Shishu, their son, they're saying. Others are seeing the Shastra, the person, you know, the Paritanaya Sarunam Vinashaya, he's descended to set things right, punish the offenders of the devotees. Vrishninam paradevateti, they're seeing their paradevata, their worshipable Lord. The yogis are seeing the paramatma. So maybe 10 different ways he's being seen. One Krishna being perceived differently. So it's a system of thought. There's not a one-word answer to this, a one-sentence answer, a catchphrase, or any such thing. It's a systematic way of viewing reality. Right? In the lower application, discerning the difference between matter and spirit, objective and subjective, and in the higher world, between individual consciousness and superconsciousness. Super subjective world as represented by, and the super, super subjective world as represented the Aprakrita Leela of Krishna. So it's a deep, all-encompassing, comprehensive, divine method of analysis and interpretation created by Srila Guru Maharaj. And he's saying, it parallels objective evolution. So we don't have to waste our time fighting against the wrong things. Just as with the Kapila of Samkhya, Samkhya's Kapila, Kapila Samkhya, the atheistic version and the theistic version are only different by an element or so. And what's that? Atma. So once you add the element of Atma, then there's no objection to things evolving this way, that way. We don't have to waste time on that. And which is a useless argument. It's soul-driven. That's all that needs to be understood. Evolution is soul-driven. Subjective evolution means the soul is driving. Whatever you perceive to be evolution, it's soul-driven. That's also to be factored in. Is it a person? Yeah, so everything is a person. That's right. So Jamuna is a person. Oh, and that's back to that point. So Guru said, the rishis, they're not foolish people. See, there was propaganda to try and make rishis appear like primitives, right? Where they're talking to the sun and the moon, and that's not who the rishis are. They're not primitive type people. Otherwise, they could not create the literature that they created and the philosophical system that they've created. So when they address the moon as a person, the sun, Rahu, it's because ultimately that's aspects of the objective world floating on consciousness. But they're given over to the conscious world. Just like we're on an inverse. We're mainly conscious of the objective world. And we have, momentary epiphanies of subjective understanding, right? Through literature, philosophy, different things. Whereas they're mainly in the subjective plane, and it's a bit hard for us to conceive that. The Bhagavatam gives one example. It says, whereas a drunk, the classic caricature of a drunk is, if a comedian wants to portray it, they put their coat, hat off their shoulder. Like, they don't know whether their clothes are on or off. Right? So sometimes when Shiva's drunk on Krishna consciousness, he's unaware whether he's naked or not. It's another thing. Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And that's what the Bhagavatam says. The liberated soul, the way that drunk doesn't know if their clothes are on or off, they're unaware whether their body is on or off. That's different. Whether they're embodied or not. So, Gurumayur's note, the Mahabhagavata must come down to the Madhyam position to function as a guru. Otherwise, from that perspective, everything's properly adjusted. Nothing needs to be adjusted. The Madhyam position is converting non-Krishna into Krishna. But if someone's in a plane where everything's Krishna and reminding them of Krishna, it's all Advaya again, one thing to be understood, but in three aspects, Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. But it's that one thing. It's Krishna and not Krishna alone. Radha and Krishna. So how can we ever really think of anything as being impersonal? In the true sense, it cannot be. Everything is not only consciousness, but Krishna consciousness. That we should understand. There's only Krishna consciousness. And illusion is to think of it in some other way, temporarily. That's what it is. But because we're addicted to that, we're thinking, well, this is taking a long time. When is it going to be over? The temporary world and the temporary illusion. May think, oh, now that I've heard about these things, why didn't it end? Because what's at the core of it all in our minds and hearts and soul is, and you know, we're still tainted with exploiting tendency. Need to reconfigure. And that's what we're doing. Under the guidance of Sadhu Shastra Guru and Vaishnav, reconfiguring, restructuring our lives through simple acts of devotion. There's always some way that you can serve or render some service or some assistance. And just as the body is the biological expression of the soul's delusion, constructed on exploiting tendencies, when we are reconfigured by the grace of Guru and Vaishnava with dedicating tendency, then this body dissolves and the swarup is manifested. Guru Maharaj gave the example of chandan. Take a stick of sandalwood and a grinding stone, pour a little rose water and grind that. So he said, through self-dissipation, the sandalwood stick, what is, it's transforming into its essence. It's a very beautiful example. So he's saying, self-dissipation, we're what we've got, aparabdha karma, this body that we generated, engaged the body, mind, senses, karmana, manasa, gira, nikalasvati, avastashu, jivan mukta suuchite. Then it'll be converted through self-dissipation into its essence. Nitya Krishnadas, the eternal servitor. So our good fortune is, by the grace of our Guru Varga, is we're giving service opportunities on the basis of things that are practical that we can do. We're not being asked to do something impossible. Simple things. Simple acts of devotion. Hare Krishna.